Okay, this hour, while we continue talking with Michael Brain about his works, The Road to Strange, and Travel Tales, we're going to take your calls, your stories, and your questions on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Michael Brain with us. Michael, do people, when they have these Road to Strange stories, do they come across cemeteries very often?
Yes, I have heard accounts of people being kind of scared.
Uh-huh.
In cemeteries, having heard things, experienced things, absolutely. And Rosemary has an incredible account of when she went to Gettysburg. She actually took random photos of the coach house, I think is where she stayed, and she had a photo of a little boy and a little girl on the window itself. And
wow.
That photo is in the book. It's just an incredible photo, and she's absolutely convinced that this was, contiguous to Gettysburg. And they heard sounds of things being moved around at night, and everybody thought it was everybody else doing it. When they were at breakfast, they said, "Did you do that?" "No, we thought you did it." But that was an experience at Gettysburg.
You participated in a United Airlines event. Tell me what that contest was all about.
This was the year 1984. United Airlines was celebrating flying to all 50 states. So somebody came up with a harebrained contest. If you flew to all 50 states within 50 days of flying, you would get a first-class pass for a year. And I decided that I had to do that. And I was actually the first person to complete it. There were 79 of us, and there were all kinds of characters doing this. One of them was one of the DuPonts, if you can believe that. And so within 13 days of flying, I took off or landed in 50 states, and I got myself a first-class pass within the domestic U.S. routes of United. I went to more UFO conferences and meetings than you can count. I went to Michigan, I went to Texas, I went to Wyoming, I went to California. I just flew inner island from Honolulu by way of the West Coast for drinks and movies and a nice meal. I had a great time.
Nothing like a great time. Let's take some calls here for you. Gary, truck driving in Texas. Hey, Gary, go ahead.
Hey, my name is Gary. I'm driving through Texas. I got a little strange truck driver story that happened to me back a couple of years ago. If y'all want
to
hear it?
Love to hear it.
I'll drive to tell it.
Sure thing, sir. Go ahead.
Okay, I picked up a load out of Laredo, Texas, and I had to take it up to Holland, Michigan. I delivered the load. Then I had to reload in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I reloaded in Grand Rapids, took my break, and I was headed heading back south down I-69. I just went through Fort Wayne, and around the 285-mile marker, maybe 20, 25 minutes after I'd been listening to George Norrie's story that night, and I missed the first part of it because I was asleep, but the second part, it was about demonology and other subjects like that. And I seen this white, like a puff of cloud. I can't quite explain it, what I actually seen, but it looked like it had some type of electrical charge to it. And the closer I got to it, I thought my eyeballs were just playing tricks on me, but it flashed. And what I seen come out of that cloud kind of bewildered me a little bit, and it just kind of spooked me because it flew right across the front of my windshield. And I could tell you exactly what it looked like, but you guys are going to probably think I was some kind of loon.
Not on this program, Gary. Go ahead.
It looked like a doggone gargoyle. I swear. Oh, I mean, it had wings. It looked right at me. It had lips, nose, eyes. It had little arms out in front of it, and I couldn't tell what it was carrying, but it looked like it was carrying something, and I watched it disappear right above the tree line, and it went right back in that flash of light. I told a friend about it. It was another truck driver with us, and he kind of ridiculed me a little bit, and I had no idea what he was going to do. He told the boss man that Gator is seeing spaceman.
What did you think you saw?
I think it was a gargoyle, or one of those, what do you call a firebird, George?
A chupacabra?
No, this had wings, and it was flying. It went right straight across.
Like a Mothman or the Jersey Devil?
Something like that, only it had a huge wingspan. I mean, I'd say like maybe 12 feet per.
That's scary. That is scary. What do you think of that, Michael?
When you mentioned the Mothman, I don't think anybody would be laughing where the Mothman took place in West Virginia. I'm sure your fellow truckers have all kinds of experiences that they're hesitant to talk about. But when you sit down together and start talking about these things, I wouldn't be surprised if you hear some more similar or different.
Like stories. I told you, there's a book there.
Oh, absolutely, there is, yeah. More things are going on around people at night while they're driving. You know, it's happening, and some people are seeing it and some aren't. But once you experience it, you're a believer, huh?
These disappearances from people when they're traveling, assuming there's nothing paranormal about it, what do you think's happening to them?
Well, in the case of my book that I was talking about, these women were kidnapped. I had a couple of accounts where women
horrible.
Were chased.
Were they always by themselves, or were they with a group of other friends?
These two women were by themselves. One was captured, put into a truck. She wriggled out, actually escaped. The other one ran down the street into her hotel, escaped. But that's the point. If they're traveling with somebody else or with a small group, they're much more likely to be safe.
Is this human trafficking?
I believe so.
In some cases?
I think it's happened more often than people realize. Absolutely. In fact, I had one account of an American man who ran into a woman traveling with Bedouins, and she was a European woman who had been kidnapped and brought into the life of living with these Bedouins and didn't want to leave.
She didn't want to live like Patty Hearst, that kind of thing, huh?
Maybe not quite like that, but she just got assimilated into their little society.
And she liked
didn't
it.
Want to leave.
That's strange.
And
Wes,
the guy was willing to help her, but she didn't want to leave.
She didn't want the help. First-time caller, Wes in Massachusetts. Wes, go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing?
Great.
Mine's about an encounter that I had in the middle of the night. My dog had passed away, and I had Googled, does the dog's soul come back to the house? And this was the first encounter. So I said to take pictures where the dog liked to be. So I took a picture, and I got an apparition of the dog.
Whoa.
So from that point on, I started videoing at night when I woke up. Now, I wake up at like 1 o'clock in the morning. This day happened to be 3:33 in the morning. I come down the hallway, and I caught in a video. And as I'm videoing, I take pictures. I caught 5 pictures of this being in the window. And I don't know if it was telepathy and it knew I was going to turn the camera, the video, towards it, but it disappeared in the window, just like that. And then like a second later, it turned around and it appeared in the window. And this thing is not from this world. It's completely bald. It's got a round head. And the pictures that I have, it looks like an alien. And I what I did is I cropped up the video and I sent it to a woman in Oklahoma. And she was in disbelief. I'd like to send it to you.
Yeah, I'd love it. George at coasttocoastam.com. I'd love to take a look at that. Great. Love those pictures. The pictures, Michael, they're very interesting, especially now that we've gone to digital cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have people that normally send you pictures like that?
Not me so much. I think maybe more Rosemary is more active than gathering information like that. We have accounts in the book of someone in it was Ireland. She was in a castle and she was looking at photographs that were apparitions photographed on a TV screen, and the TV was off, according to the person who took the picture. So there are these anomalous photos around, and they certainly suggest something paranormal. Really hard to put your finger on it exactly.
We've got Rick in Denver, Colorado, west of the Rockies. Hey, Rick, go ahead.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay,
hey,
Rick. Thanks.
Thanks for taking my call. I really love the show. Like you said earlier, it's just it's a vehicle to get all these great people's knowledge and experience out to the rest of the world. It's great. So I was, I moved down to Australia as a kid, and I remember the first month or so I was there, I couldn't understand what anyone was saying, even though they were speaking English. They were speaking fast and using phrases I wasn't familiar with, and it was really uncomfortable the first month because I just couldn't understand what they were saying. So when I, when my parents took me to Europe, right after I graduated high school, they went off and did their own thing, so I was pretty much alone for most of the time. And so I was alone in Germany and Austria, and I remember the language. I didn't speak any German or any other language, and so I remember just feeling so foolish that I was there by myself, and I couldn't speak the language with anyone, and I just remember how shocking that was and how vulnerable I felt. So so that's one thing, but one night I was, you know, walking around Vienna, and I did run into a situation where these three guys were basically going to rob me, you know, in this dark, kind of a dark alley area. And there was this other guy that came up kind of, you know, just dressed like a businessman, or, and he spoke with them briefly, and I don't know what they were saying, but they kind of looked at each other and they just took off as quick as possible. And then this guy, this business guy, kind of looked at me like he was disappointed or just, you know, like he wasn't happy with me. But then he went on. So I don't know what that was all about, but he saved me from getting robbed or killed or whatever was going to happen. And so that was pretty dangerous. You know, I couldn't even understand what they were saying. And I was pretty adventurous, so I wasn't really scared. I mean, I was scared at that moment, but in general, I wasn't really scared about much. So I was really adventurous. And the next day, I ended up hopping a wall kind of outside the city, but I was going out to look at the palace or whatever was out there. And there was this big area that maybe was a park or an estate. And I remember scaling that wall to see what was back there because I wanted to just kind of, I just always wanted to explore. And there were wolves or dogs that were, you know, still pretty close to wolves that, started chasing me. I mean, not like literally chasing me, but like they were there, and I was like, "Well, I got to get out of here."
Yeah,
menacing. And I don't know if there were people there, but I don't remember how I got out of there. Next thing I know, I'm on the train going back to the hospital, and I don't remember how I got out of that situation. It's a complete blackout. So I don't know what happened with that, but I guess the main thing is how vulnerable and how dangerous that was for me to be alone, not even speaking the language. And, oh, my God, I mean, I could have ended up in jail or killed or something.
Oh, or yeah, absolutely.
Well, I want to add something to that. Mostly travel safe most of the time, and you can get yourself in situations, and you seem to certainly get out of the dangerous ones. But something you were talking about reminds me of what we call culture shock. And you see this, for an example, like, let's say, a Peace Corps volunteer who's living in an overseas culture, going to be there for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, there's a lot of anxiety, and he's uncomfortable and depressed because he's not communicating with people because of the language. But if you persist and you get better and better, and suddenly you're communicating better and you're understanding people and you're getting along better, that's how culture shock dissipates. It's usually longer-term people spending time in cultures. But when you're just a visitor, well, you're not really going to understand people all that well that quickly.
And they call you, of course, the travel psychologist. Explain that.
Well, I'm a person that has studied the experience of traveling in as many different ways as I could really look at it and think about the issues and try to determine what I can learn from it and what I can share. And I found doing this over the years, interviewing as many people as I have and collecting these interviews and stories, that I certainly have learned a whole lot about it. And it amazes me even more, why hasn't anybody else really been doing this?
Well, that's because you're the creative one, Michael.
Well, it was a niche that I created and goes on. And I get...
I mean, why didn't we invent the... laptop computer.
Well, you know, travel psychology is important. Maybe laptop computers might be a little more important. I don't know.
Let's go to Joe, truck driving in Indiana. Hi, Joe. What do you got for us?
George.
Hello.
My condolences on Mr. Art Bell there, man.
Thank you, sir.
Anyway, I got a bit of a doozy for you tonight. Got a little paranormal group between me and two of my friends here.
Okay.
And we took a trip 2 years ago out to a small coal mining town in Congo, Ohio. And it's reported to be a bit of a ghost town, but when we got there, it was still pretty well inhabited. And had a lot of abandoned buildings here and there. But there's one place that we were trying to find for a little investigation out that way. And as we were driving up this old gravel road back there, we saw the building, or at least as we thought it might have been the building we were looking for. And there's a little roundabout. My buddy pointed out, like, there it is, you know. And he's like, well, hit that roundabout right there, turn around, and we'll hit it with the headlights there just to get a look at it, you know. And by the time we had turned around, the entire house had disappeared.
Jeez.
Like, one moment it was there, turn around, and then it's gone. And we've had some weird things in our paranormal investigations, you know, like doors closing, weird noises, footsteps, maybe a whisper or two here and there, but never before have I ever heard of a disappearing house.
That, no, I've never heard of that. Michael, have you heard of one of those?
I have.
Really?
I've heard of a couple of accounts that were similar to that. One was a town along the California coast that a man swore he went through, and other people said, nope, wasn't there, it didn't exist. There was a cottage in Scotland that a person saw and from a distance and came back at another time, and it was gone. It was not there. I think the possibility is what might be called portals or time slips, where you stumble into something that's at a different time. Yeah, talk about people disappearing, George. Remember your guest was suggesting that people may have slipped into different...
The time warps.
Yeah, time warps.
Other dimensions.
One of our stories in the UFO book is Ron Russell, a famous, well-known crop circle person, was in a crop circle, and he decided he needed to go back and get some film, and he's walking towards his car along a tram line, which didn't end. It merged, and he said, tram lines don't merge. At the end of that, he saw what looked like an ancient village, smelled fires, food cooking, children yelling, dogs barking, and he had an about-face. He decided it was too dangerous for him to continue. He had to go back and get his friend who was in the crop circle that they were looking at, went back and said, look, you have to see this, John. Starts to bring John back, and they never got to that point. They got back to the car where the film was. So he had stumbled into something that he feels was connected with that crop formation.
There are a million stories like that, Michael, aren't there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there are.
And the scary hitchhiker stories, to me, are really creepy. You know, when you pick up someone and then they want to be dropped off at a cemetery. And
yeah.
Those are strange ones, huh?
Yes, they are.
They happen all over the country. Well, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take final phone calls. Michael Brain's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. In addition to the book Travel Tales, he wrote a couple with our friend Rosemary Ellen Guiley called The Road to Strange. Two books, same initial title with different subtitles, and you can find those at Amazon.com as well. We will be back with your final calls. On our next Coast to Coast program, Earl Mendel joins us, the expert on supplements and diets. He's got an incredible story about hemp, so make sure you're part of the program. And then we'll be talking with Jeff Belanger about extraterrestrials. That'll be our next Coast to Coast show. And welcome back to Coast, Michael Brain with us. George Norrie here, his latest book, Travel Tales. And again, where do we get your books, Michael?
Right from the links on your site or Amazon. That's the best place to go.
Isn't it amazing Amazon started as just a book online system, and then look what happened to it?
It's incredible. It's just
what a story.
Thing. I think it's just great news. And actually, you know, brick-and-mortar bookstores seem to be coming back.
And I'm glad they are. I'm glad they are because, you know, we need them.
George, there's one other book in my series that might be interesting to some people. Can I talk about that for a second?
Well, what if it's not? No, I'm kidding.
That's funny. No, this is my own personal collection of 150 of my own stories, in case anybody thinks...
Is this the Michael's Own Best?
Yes, yes, Best 150. It's just a collection of my own personal tales that covers a lot of different experiences that I've had, and some people might find that interesting.
What's the strangest thing that ever you encountered or you went through?
Oh, give me a second.
All right. I mean, on your many travels.
Well, so many. Some really funny things. Here's one that's one of my favorites. I was in the Peterhof Palace in outside of St. Petersburg, Russia, and there was a group of young Russian teenage girls, and I thought, I want to make them laugh. Let me try and make them laugh. So there was a fountain demon sitting behind a bush pushing buttons to squirt people periodically with water coming up between the stones.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, why don't I just taunt the fountain god enough so that he'll squirt me, and then I'll make the group of Russian teenage girls laugh. That's exactly what happened. I got soaked. The girls were laughing, and so was the fountain god. He was laughing, too. I love that story.
Back to the phones we go. Let's go to Joe in Long Island, New York. Hey, Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Michael. Great topic tonight. I had a couple of questions and a brief Alaskan story. My two questions were, like, I'm sure you've been to Rome, and I'm wondering if having old structures around, you know, modern structures generates strange phenomena, such as the Roman Colosseum, the old roads, which is still visible. And have you heard of any border run stories where people are getting almost like chased out of the movie, like that Yul Brynner movie? I think the name was Roads of Zanzibar. And my Alaskan thing, I had done a gig in Alaska, and this could relate to your travel stories. And basically, I worked next to the Parks Highway for the summer, Denali National Park. And I remember I hopped in with a couple of guys, and they had their car, and somehow they were from closer to, got a car up there, and drove on an old oil road that was unused apparently at this point, you know, but it was basically still, you know, a decent road, but not paved. And they went about 75 miles in. It was a beautiful afternoon and great scenery. But I was thinking, there's nobody else on this road at this time. There might have been one other car. What happens if something happens to this car? Because they were driving fast on this road. And there was, you'd have to walk maybe 75 miles out. And again, the scenery was mint. And I was just thinking of the idea of people positioning themselves where if something goes wrong, there's no available help for many miles, and you're in terrain with wild animals, et cetera, et cetera. You know, people traveling almost being overly trusting of their vehicle, the situation, and the distance they are from anybody else.
Well, often too trusting of people. The old adage, don't trust somebody just because they're dressed well and they speak your language. They could be predators. You never know. You have to be really careful about trusting, and you need to evaluate situations like you're suggesting of how dangerous they can potentially be. You have to take these things into account.
Absolutely. What was one of your other questions there, Joe?
Yeah, like just the idea. Now, for example, you know, the idea of like even in Ireland, he was mentioning Ireland. Like I remember being there for an Irish wedding, and there was like a string of stores, including a deli. And then the next structure was a monastery from the Middle Ages and semi-ruins. And I was thinking, you'd never see that in the United States.
No, you don't see that at all, Michael, do you?
It's hard to. This is the great appeal of traveling to Central Europe and Western Europe and the UK to see these old architectural wonders that we just don't have. But of course, we have lots of history. If you explore Native American ruins. You know, there's a lot of history in America, and it goes back way back, and there's a lot of stories. There's a lot of ghost stories to be explored.
Why do you think, as you mentioned, Ireland and England may be the creepiest areas?
It's not all necessarily creepy. Let's just say I've heard positive experiences. I know you brought that up earlier.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much ancient history going back. There's so much that we really don't understand in that area of England near Stonehenge and Avebury. There's so much going on. There's so little that we really know. And people are often drawn ancestrally. That sometimes they don't even realize it until they're in an area that actually they've been beckoned to explore, to reconnect, to go back. And there's some of that in Rosemary in my books.
Next up, we've got Ed in California. Welcome to the program. Edward, go ahead.
Hi, George. Ed in Tehachapi.
I'm glad you said it.
Oh, come on. You know that.
I know that.
I was going to – I have a question for Michael, but I thought my feeling about the Ireland-England thing is that if you're at all sensitive and psychic, you notice that in those areas, I don't know whether it's due to the ley lines or what, but there's a thinning of the veil in that area more than elsewhere in Europe, and I think it's more prone to interdimensional phenomena.
Yeah, it's like Mount Shasta.
Yeah, something like that. Now, the reason I called, and now you kind of covered it a little bit. In my younger days, I had a lot of experience and a lot of interaction with college-age kids, and I was always fascinated, and Michael's the perfect person, the first time I've ever brought this up, because he's the perfect person to comment on this, both as a psychologist and as a world traveler. But I used to hear the strangest stories from friends, and, you know, Michael probably knows this too, and you, George, that college-age kids can get this, all of a sudden they just get an idea on a long weekend and say, hey, I'm gonna drive out to Colorado because I want a case of Coors. You know, that kind of goofy stuff goes on. And you don't think about it. You don't worry about whether your car is in good shape or anything, and you just get out on the road. And I've often thought, boy, when these kids do this, their guardian angels must really have to go into high gear. And because I've heard some of these kids come back from some of these trips and some of the interventions that have happened, for instance, going out to Colorado, the snowstorm, you can't keep going. You see a diner, you pull off to the side of the road, seems like the 1950s, you know, you're welcomed, you have something to eat, and the waitress says, well, the snow's going to end soon, then they can take off. And then on their way back, they try to find the same diner, and there's nothing there.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That kind of story I've heard over and over again. I wondered, from your perspective, having dealt with this more generally than I have, is this common, as common as I've experienced it?
I don't know how common it is. I mean, I've heard of these things, but you bring up a really interesting thing, and that is, what does age have to do with all this? Is if you're more carefree and less anxious and worried and concerned, might you be more open to having things happen? Well, if you look at children are always thought to be more receptive to psychic kinds of things because they don't,
right?
You know, they don't filter them out. And I think the same thing for these carefree, college-age, you know, young adults. Maybe there's a similar thing there, too. They're less filtering out, maybe more prone, more apt to have intervention of guardian angel things. Who knows? It's interesting, and I think you have a point there. I think maybe something like that is happening.
Do you have any stories of angelic type of intervention on any of these cases?
I do, and it had to do with driving in a snowstorm. These people were in Germany, several different nationalities. They're driving, and suddenly this huge snowstorm is happening, and the driver hears this voice, pull over to the left, go slower. You know, it's like a backseat driver,
right.
But it was a guardian angel. Two of them heard it and there, and it saved their lives, because had they not followed the instructions of what he was hearing in the car, he would have fallen down a cliff into a creek. They would have been killed.
We had a truck driver call in once during open lines, and he was talking about how he was falling asleep as he was going around a cliff bend, and he wakes up to see a hand on his steering wheel pulling him back onto the side of the road, avoiding from going over the edge, and there was nobody else in the cab.
Yeah, it seems like some of this does happen to people. Now, why? You know, it wasn't their time. Who knows? But, yes, I've heard accounts of this, and I think they're out there.
Bud is in the Lumpac, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Bud, thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Good evening, George and Michael.
Hi there.
When I was 16, I was driving either to Minot, North Dakota, or away from Minot, North Dakota, towards Montana. And I was very tired, just like you were talking about, and dozing off. I was looking for a rest area to pull over.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the peak summer months, so the roads were very busy. There was this was 42 years ago. The roads are busy. There was a lot of tractor trucks on the road, and there were, you know, people, a lot of people on the road, and the rest areas were always full. And I pulled into this one rest area, and I got the creepiest feeling I had ever felt. And there was not one person in the rest area.
Mm-hmm.
There was no closed signs up.
You were all by yourself.
Did you experience?
There was nobody in the rest area, and I was so tired, but I got such a bad feeling. I knew I couldn't stop.
You couldn't stay there. Yeah.
This is 40-something years ago, and it's one of them stories that, one of them things that has never left that I've always remembered. So I just kept driving, and I went to the next rest area, and it was the same thing at the next rest area. There was one light by the bathroom lit. Other than that, there was no lights, there were no closed signs, and no cars parked there. I'm exhausted driving, that tired. You know, like dozing behind the wheel, trying to stay on the line. Finally, I got to the next one, which is probably 180 miles, because they were usually 60 miles apart, and it was packed.
Isn't that weird?
Bright lights everywhere. You couldn't find a spot. I mean, everybody. There was the campers were in there. The trucks were in there. I was so tired. I found a place to park. I wanted to get out so bad and ask people why they didn't stop at the other rest areas if they felt that way too. I just fell asleep.
It would be kind of eerie, wouldn't it, Michael, to pop up at a rest area like that in the wee hours and there's no one there.
And
pitch black.
Then you discover that something happened with the time.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our stories, a guy discovered he didn't use any gas to drive this huge distance, no gas, and it was weird. No cars, no gas, no nothing. And so, what happened to him? Some kind of time slip, time warp.
Let's go to Angela in Philadelphia. Welcome to the program. Hi, Angela.
Hi, honorable brother, Mr. Lori, and
Hi.
Honorable Mr. Michael. I thank you so much because I'm concentrating on my highest level. Greatest, grandest, Archangel St. Michael. And the bottom line here is I am what you're talking about. I am Angela Del Frilly, Angel Lady Del Blissman, inspired from emissary from the Bird Tribe. I'm Princess Golden Eagle Lady. However, I've had no electricity since August 1st, 2017.
No electricity for that long? You're breaking up a little bit, Angel, and we're almost at the end. But it's got to be tough not to have electricity for a year, huh?
My goodness.
That's a long time, Michael. Michael, we're wrapping things up.
Okay.
And for people who want to follow you for your next books, what do they do?
I think the best thing is to go to my website, www.michaelbrien.com. Or go to Rosemary's site, too, visionaryliving.com. com. And this has been a great pleasure, and I hope to talk to your audience again in the near future.
Happy travels, Michael.
Thank you, George. Great to meet you.
You too. You too. And our next Coast to Coast program, just stick with us. We've got a series of great shows all week long. You're going to love our Friday night program, by the way. And don't forget, I'll be on Sunday night, first Sunday of the month, with emerging artists and some great guests as well as we get you rolling into May. Wow, it's fast. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.